You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter. Send us your Illegal Curve 50-50 draw predictions and your Illegal Curve game-winning goal predictions. You can do that via our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Jeremy Weiss. Jeremy has spent some time in the past week or 2 weeks breaking down the Jets' power play, which can be described charitably as atrocious. So he has some insights into the Jets' power play. Jeremy, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. We sort of put you a little bit to work to try and break down what you've noticed on the Jets' power play and why it's been struggling so much. And, well, the first thing first is they simply haven't been getting very many power play opportunities.
Yeah, and you know what? I've watched most of their games the past 2 weeks, and last week was a lot worse than it was just this past week. So against Boston, I think they only had 2 power plays. Against Buffalo, they only had 1 the entire game. This week, you know, against the Rangers and the Devils, they started using their speed more, which, you know, anytime you use speed, especially guys like Kane, he uses his speed, and you either have to keep up with them or you have to drag them down somehow. And if you can't keep up with them, you know, that's where it forces penalties or draws penalties. And, you noticed him doing that a couple times, driving the puck wide, and their defensemen are forced to haul him down.
Jeremy, I think you'd agree that, you know, the Jets' power play, the puck movement's, you know, it's not that bad once they actually get set up. Can you talk about the puck movement on the power play and maybe how they're not translating that into good scoring chances?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things I notice is, like, when they finally get in the zone, they set up pretty well. There's good puck movement. They have, you know, they draw guys out and then move it properly. I liked what I saw as far as puck movement goes. They're using kind of a standard umbrella, as far as I could tell. But, you know, the puck move is pretty good. The main problem I'm seeing is actually getting it to that point where they can set up. And that's where, you know, as I was going through the film, that's what I kept seeing time and time again is just, having a really hard time getting the actual setup.
Yeah, Jeremy, it's exactly right. And we were talking about that before coming on the air. You talked about the issues with the breakout and then getting the puck through the neutral zone. What has been maybe their biggest problem when they're trying to force it through the neutral zone?
Okay, so from a coaching perspective, everybody's going to have different opinions whenever you're talking about, you know, how a system should be run. My personal philosophy is, especially on the power play, you're going to walk the puck. So that usually a power play starts, the power play breakout starts from the other team dumping the puck mm-hmm, in, right? Mm-hmm. So, generally speaking, your breakout's starting from behind your own net. What I usually like to see is the defenseman walk the puck until he draws a man in, and then using the pass to beat the man. So after you use the pass to beat the man, then now what have you got? You've got a 4-on-3. So you sequentially drop players in and then beat them with a pass until you've basically broken it down until it's a 2-on-1 or a 1-on-0. But, yeah, I mean, that's textbook, obviously. It doesn't always happen exactly textbook, but that's kind of the objective of what you're trying to do. What I see happening is, and especially against those 2 games last week, Boston and Buffalo, is the defenseman would walk out, there wouldn't be any immediate pressure on him, and so he would just be anxious to make that pass. So he'd pass up ice into coverage. And, that's where Boston and Buffalo were eating them alive is because they would just, you know, they'd wait for that pass and then, you know, close in on that guy. So instead, you're using the pass to actually beat yourself instead of drawing a player in and then making a pass to beat the forechecker. Now, I have no problem with the defenseman walking it coast to coast mm-hmm. on a power play if there's nobody that comes and gets him. If nobody comes and gets him, then walk it. Walk it until somebody does come. It's a question of forcing the other team to make decisions. And if you pass too early or force a pass that's not there, you're making it so they don't have to make decisions. If they don't have to make decisions, they just hang back and wait for you to give it to them. And that's exactly what's happening.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jeremy Weiss. You can check out more of Jeremy's work at weisstechhockey.com. Has some great hockey videos on that website. We're breaking down the Jets power play here on TSN 1290. Jeremy, you know, so we've already outlined that the Jets are having trouble sort of establishing themselves on the power play and getting set up in their umbrella system, as you mentioned. Then once they're able to do that, what you seem to be noticing is that they're taking shots and maybe giving up possession of the puck not at ideal times, where players may not be in a good position in order to capitalize on any rebounds or any shots that miss the net, as we've seen them do. It's sort of get into the zone, set up, take a rushed shot, and boom, already back out the other end, the defensive team clearing it away.
Yeah, and that happened a lot in the games last week. You know what? I kind of set up this general rule where if you don't have, you know, if you don't have a 2-on-1 or better on the power play, you're better off to just drive deep, get the setup, and let your guys get in position, because power play setups, it's a question of percentages. So you want to take the best shot possible that's going to give your guys the highest likelihood, you know, of being able to jump on the rebound and maintain control. If you lose control of the puck on the power play, then boom, the other team ices it, you're down, you know. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you've just blown off 20 seconds off the clock, because now you got to go all the way back, re-break it out, and go from there. So that was a couple things. Like, I saw a couple, like a one-on-two, I believe, where I don't remember which player it was, but he drove in, cut to the middle, and shot between the two defensemen. And then sure enough, you know, the defenseman began to rebound, to went into the corner, and, you know, dumped it right back down again. It happened a few times that way. So, you know, on the initial attack, I like that. You know, it's not a hard and fast rule, obviously, but the general rule, if you don't have a 2-on-1 or better, you're better off to drive D set up and wait for your guys to come get the set up with you. And then your shots are going to be calculated to give yourself the highest percentage chance of getting the rebound.
Jeremy, you mentioned that you've analyzed the Jets' power play on film, and you've noticed that they're forcing passes. You know, is it? I know you don't want to single out guys, but is it one particular player who's forcing passes? Is it a certain setup where they're forcing passes? And how and why is that such a big deal? And how is that contributing to their lack of success on the power play?
So it on the game film I watched, and it is one specific guy, but I can't remember which one it was. If I were like a commentator, I'd probably just know these guys offhand. but it was a defenseman. It was actually on the breakout. And there was one sequence in particular where he came out, there was nobody there, he forced a pass, it got intercepted, kind of chipped back onto his stick again, he kind of regrouped it, stepped out again up the middle, there was nobody on him, but then he forced the pass again, and same thing happened again, they dumped it back in, he went back in and got it, came out and tried it a third time, and it got intercepted again. So it's three passes in sequence on the same shift that, you know, he forced the pass, it wasn't there, and then it got dumped back in. Now, to the Jets' credit, you know, I don't know, maybe they watched the game film and saw the same thing that I did, but, you know, they really fixed it in this past week. Just, you know, against, I caught the Rangers and the Devils games, and, yeah, they really fixed it. I mean, you saw the defenseman walking it a couple times from end to end, yep, driving it deep in the corner and then getting the setup. And like I said, their strength is in their setup. And so if they're able to just drive down, focus on getting the setup instead of getting the initial shot, then, you know, things open up from there. Now, they still aren't converting, but, you know, the breakout and the setup and the puck movement was much, much better in this past week.
You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Jeremy Weiss of Weiss Tech Hockey. We're breaking down the Jets power play. You can read more of Jeremy's work at weisstechhockey.com.
Jeremy, you know, we talk about some of the issues. What would be some of your suggestions to solve the problems that the Jets have been facing on the power play?
So the way I'm looking at it is, you know, if they continue to make the improvements that they have been, as far as their breakout and gaining the setup in the zone, you know, their main problem now, I mean, their puck movement, like I said, is pretty good once they've got their power play set up. Their main thing is just figuring out how to finish, you know, how to bury the puck. There's a couple of small things that I see that maybe could be improved on. First and foremost is where their players, you know, in the standard umbrella, you've got, you know, your high guy in the middle, mm-hmm, and you've got two guys that are somewhat high, kind of at the tops of the circles. And then usually you have two guys near the net. Different teams stagger those guys differently, but what I'm seeing is, especially the main guy, he's right on top of the goalie, like right, his heels are on the edge of the crease most of the time. Now, there are different philosophies and different, you know, different approaches to screening a goalie, and I'm not even going to say one is better than the other, but they work differently in different scenarios. So if you're going to be right on top of the goalie, obviously that's it's a better screen. The goalie has a harder time seeing through you, and it's obnoxious for the goalie to have to deal with you there. So, you know, if that's what you're trying to accomplish, then that's great. But the risk you run is that the shot comes in, hits the goalie, and the rebound bounces past you, right, which is what's happening a lot with the Jets. If they don't end up fixing this today, then watch for it. Watch for it in the game. You know, the rebound oftentimes comes in, goalie makes a save, and the rebound bounces past the guy, so then he can't get to the rebound. What I would say is, you know, maybe try pulling that guy out 6 or 8 feet, so that now he's further out from the goalie. Now you're gonna lose some stuff. You're not gonna be as obnoxious in front of the net. The goalie is he'll be able to see the shot a little bit better. But what you gain is, if you think about the physics of the deflection, if you're right on top of the goalie and you tip the puck, it doesn't have nearly as much space to change direction before it actually arrives on net as it does if you're 8 feet out in front. So position yourself in the exact same, you know, space, so you're still between the shot and the goalie, but just move yourself out from the front of the net about 8 feet, and you've got yourself, all of a sudden now you've got yourself a lot more space that the puck can change direction if you tip it. And on the flip side of the coin, if the rebound comes out, there's a higher likelihood that you'll be able to get your stick on it.
Jeremy Weiss from Weiss Tech Hockey. You can see more of his work at Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, techhockey.com. Jeremy, thanks as always for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some great insight.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Take care, Jeremy. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.